Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Mod State Podcast. How are you, my friend?
I'm great because I'm here with you with bells on, with bated breath.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I don't know. Glad you're here.
Yeah.
At a minimum.
Yeah. The preview just got me all excited.
Well, it is never a dull moment in the United States of America. But if there wasn't anything going on in the United States, I'm sure we could say the same thing about the world. So there would never be a dull moment.
No, not ever.
So, as always, thank you everybody for tuning in domestically and internationally. It is much appreciated, and your listenership is, you know, we don't take it for granted, and we appreciate every recommendation and every listen. So, as always, head over to modstate.com where you can find more op-ed and opinion pieces. And of course, if you don't feel like listening to the podcast on the current platform that you are on, you can always find it at the website. So,
yeah, send us an email, modstate@modstate.com. We love hearing from everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was fun.
And you know, we've had some studio moves and whatnot, little hiatus at the end of 2018. But the goal here is to move forward and get YouTube channel back up for a podcasts that we will record for YouTube, so you can see our beautiful faces, handsome faces, and also for non-podcast related videos that we will upload, whether that's some stream of consciousness from myself or from John. And you know, then you can comment and troll us and do whatever you want. So
please troll. Trolls welcome,
man. You're open up. Well, it's not like we haven't had them before, so.
Well, I mean, we've gotten some ugly emails, but you know, I say if it's good enough for the executive office, it's good enough for our inbox.
Fair enough. Well, I think we were going to. We've got a as a teaser coming up. We've got a. I'm not sure how many parts it's going to be, at least two parts on universal healthcare. And I know everyone's rolling their eyes because they've heard me talk at length about universal healthcare. However,
I guess we haven't.
But the reality is almost every Democratic nominee will be pushing some sort of universal healthcare. I think the outliers will be those who don't agree with universal healthcare, quite frankly. I think you'll see multiple, platforms in which they all agree, which would be, I think, recreational marijuana or cannabis legalization and universal healthcare. So we figured we'd dive into universal healthcare because I think what you find on those 90-minute debates or even open or town hall, I call it open mic, geez, even those town halls is
you like that though, an open mic night.
Open mic night. You may not hear a lot of the nuts and bolts or the potentials or the consequences of these this specific policy.
Just gonna get the nuts.
Yeah, oh boy. But what you will hear at this podcast is two individuals that I think we overwhelmingly agree that something needs to happen and there needs to be an overhaul in our healthcare system. However, you know, I think we present some interesting pros and cons back and forth, but that's just a teaser. So tonight, more current event driven.
You and your teasing, my goodness.
Hey man, you know, tease them with it for a little bit, you know, got to keep it fresh, you know, otherwise it gets old, gets yeah. Stale.
It's like a sort of audio, never mind.
Oh God. Oh boy. Well, what hasn't happened? Okay. So the last time we left, there was not a national emergency declared for our border wall. The last time we got together, the government reopened, and we were exceedingly happy for that. But And here's how I feel about the border wall national emergency. It's not that I necessarily think that other things are more emergent than this. It's like I was waiting for it. I was like, don't do it. Try to salvage this some way else. Try to salvage this somehow, some way. Don't do it. And then thwap, did it. And it wasn't even that convincing, John. It literally was like, I didn't have to do it.
We argued against it at the same time as presenting it. It was rather bizarre.
Literally. Like,
I don't know if it was intentional.
Well,
talking about someone that revels in going off script, I think he might have done it to his own detriment here.
Dude, I mean, how do you... Okay, it's like... It literally is like calling 911, like calling the fire department. And then they get here and they're like, what's the emergency? You're like, well, I didn't have to do it, but, you know, it did. And I didn't have to.
Look, we were drinking a lot.
It wasn't that big a deal, but I did it anyway. And the fire, meanwhile, there's a house burning down a block away.
You guys were cool with that, right?
Yeah, you guys were cool with me.
Cops would show up and beat the shit out of you.
Jesus. They send you a big fat bill.
Maybe they should.
So,
like, you've heard the segment Chris Rock did, right? In situations when you deserve to get your ass kicked by the police, you know? It's like, look, you know, if the police have to come and get your ass, they're bringing an ass whooping with them. You know, and he says, if you're caught jumping a turnstile, smoking a joint with a pistol tucked in between your, behind your belt, maybe you need to get your ass kicked by the
police. So,
it's one of those.
Yeah. So, I felt like that was about the most or the best analogy, or at least analogous to the national emergency that was declared. So here we are. Here's the president giving a half-hearted, half-assed attempt to explain to the American people and the world why we needed this to be a national emergency, which to me was a major pandering to his 33% base.
The fact that he brought that up, I think, is you're about to get to. Not once, if I'm remembering correctly, but twice, either in the address or since, the fact that, well, I know it was a campaign promise, but.
Mm-hmm. But.
It's like, well, yeah. You're the one that brought it up.
So here we are. And the reality of this is I we talked about this a little bit last night, and I think the reality is, the president of the United States came out looking, I don't want to use the word weak, but he definitely wasn't the winner. If you want to subscribe a winner or a loser to this overall circus, but
there's 330 million losers.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. But he needed to do something and to sort of rectify his negative position, or the negativity that sort of spawned from this. And again, it doesn't, the question then is, how much better does it look when this goes through the court system and doesn't meet muster? Because at the end of the day, his 33% base is with him if he brings the apocalypse to the world. I mean, that's just the reality.
But the issue is, as I kind of posited last night, I'll posit again here, he's daring the court system to take this on. And yes, I think he's right that it'll end up at the Supreme Court. That's where I'm going, okay, so you're willing to put a big portion of your legacy here, if this is a one-term presidency, on the line, counting on the votes of Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean that's where we're at.
Yeah, and I mean there's so many facets to this, and that being okay, I talked about this a bit last night with you, where, you know, you look at someone like Lyndon B. Johnson, who had a wildly popular first 2 years, and then his last 2 years of his presidency, like his numbers declined, his popularity declined, and he was out.
I can't imagine why.
Right. Well, and he had some very, at the time, maybe unpopular, but, you know, it has been overwhelmingly progressive since. But
we've never forgiven him and Lady Bird down in South Louisiana for what they did to New Orleans East.
Well, that seems like a regional problem to me. But
yeah, it's a personal problem. Screw me, right?
But I think my point is, it's like, not that he had some soaring popular first 2 years, but I just, you wind up, I think, remembering the most recent event of an individual's life, right? Or legacy. So what will shine, and because the president hasn't done anything wildly popular or at this point, like, obviously ethically unconstitutional, etc.
Let's asterisk that real quick, because it lie on the air as we recorded, you acknowledged at the time that First Step had disappeared from the front page of the Huffington Post inexplicably. Yeah. Part of that's through the media.
Well, and I think it's one of those things, like it's easier to frown than it is to smile.
For us to say that the man had, that it hasn't, I get what you're saying. There's like, all right, what is the signature accomplishment? But part of that comes down to, well, the media was certainly in no rush to discuss First Step, which...
Well, the thing about First Step...
Or the banning of bump stocks.
Which is good, but I think when you have someone who's so wildly unpopular, and just bear with me on this, when you have someone that's so wildly unpopular on these big ticket items like gun control, like law and order, when you have something like bump stocks, I think when the left sees that, they say, okay, good. Yeah, this should have been done a long time ago. Like, good job, check. Or First Step. It's a first step. Like, there's enough other... I mean, the criminal justice system has not been reformed. We have not given...
In fact, it was last made worse by a Democratic president whose wife, anybody wants to guess who that was, calling people super predators...
I guess what I'm saying is, though those were good things, and I wanted to reflect on this a bit, and I think this is sort of my take on this. Though those were good things, they weren't monumental. They weren't they haven't really done a lot to really make notable change. The first step is the first step. I mean, that, like, good job, good. We should have done. It's one of those things. It's like, we should have done that a long time ago. It's,
and the,
like,
banning of bump stocks is something that President Obama declined to do.
Yeah, and like I say, I give credit to him. Good job. But I think when you look at, like, a HuffPo, which is obviously biased, it isn't that they don't want to. Well, I mean, I can't speak for them, but it isn't that they would like to. No, that's completely wrong. They hate him even if he cures AIDS. I guess my point is, for the average individual who sees criminal justice system reform, gun control as something that needs to be done, the things that he did do, though they were positive, were just sort of like, okay, good, yeah, we should. So let's make it better. Let's you're move right. on. So
you're right. You got to dig a little deeper than the everyday person wants to, and I understand. I mean, for instance, I would list early on in the infancy of his presidency, the third or fourth executive order, I wrote about it on the site, but that stated a one in, two out policy for regulations. Mm-hmm. Small event that, in my mind, was long overdue as a fiscal conservative and someone that feels like the government should be more afraid of the people than the other way around. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing to me, okay?
Yeah.
Being anti-regulatory. I get that. You got to dig for that. I would posit, and let me know your take on this, that perhaps the most significant movement, positive moves, monumental moves of the Trump presidency have been in the arena of foreign policy. And I'm referring specifically here to not to the Syria and Afghanistan deal, which we don't know how it's going to work out yet. We haven't moved yet. The military is opposed to it.
Yeah.
Frankly, I don't see it happening on any real level.
No.
But the engagement... detente, for lack of a better term, with North Korea is something, you love or hate the president, that doesn't matter. That is a monumental move, and it's something that no president prior has been able to move the ball downfield on, or do I exaggerate?
Well, here's a couple issues, I think, and I'm not I'm not necessarily speaking for myself, because I think I can
move the embassy to Jerusalem, which I know you don't.
I can take kind of a macro step back. So let me just step back in terms of like bump stocks before I move to North Korea.
Don't move to North Korea.
Oh, yeah. Sounds great. Pyongyang. I heard there's some really nice condos on the coast.
They just don't have internet or electricity outside of there. So definitely move to Pyongyang.
Okay. Or just maybe if I could just get food as a starting point. But
they don't.
Okay. So here's bump stocks. It's as positive as that is. Literally, the issue of mass shootings, the issue of schools being shot up, workplaces being shot up, the issue of inner city gun violence, domestic violence, like that hasn't changed. Like he didn't actually move the needle on any of that.
Who was going to move the needle on inner city violence?
Well, Chicago's. Yeah. Well, I guess my
toughest gun laws in the country, yeah, perhaps next to New York City.
And I'm not debating making it a gun control debate. What I'm saying is that even though you do something positive that maybe the left can get behind, like, oh, we banned bump stocks.
You don't think it balances out as.
But the next day there's a mass shooting. Like, it's like, okay, like there, where did the needle get moved here? And the same would be with first step. So we have, and I think the reality is that we haven't seen much happen from First Step, and maybe there'll be some consequence, positive consequence from the inaction of First Step down the road that we just can't see right now. But I think even
to interview the people that just got out of prison.
Sure. But, you know, I think if he had gone ahead, and this would not be politically savvy for, you know, a conservative to do, or as in theory, would be to say, look, here are the people with felonies who have atoned for their sins, so to speak, and that we're going to give them, we're going to make them citizens again and not make them second-class citizens for a mistake they've made. I'm not saying everyone, but I'm saying let's take these type of individuals who have felonies and allow them to be a citizen again. That, to me, is far more monumental and captures more of the imagination and has more of a response to the average public and the average American than just the first step. I mean, there wasn't enough in it that I think got people excited about it. And I think that's why it dropped off. I think that's partly why it dropped off, like a site like HuffPo, because I think they just love to hate him. But I think there would have been more discussion around it if there had been more to it, more substance to it, like more drastic, monumental moves made in First Step. So that leads me to North Korea. Now, if the president, whether he is guilty or he is not guilty, continues to be embroiled in potential, if not him, there are a number of individuals that have been close to him that have pled guilty to crimes that they have committed. And it's not, and we're coming out now with Cambridge Analytica, Steve Bannon, that's like history at this point, that if he wasn't so embroiled in all of these, Russia, for example,
Steve
foreign
Bannon
policy.
Hasn't been convicted of anything.
No, but when you start finding the links between the campaign, Cambridge Analytica, the United States, swaying public elections, data mining, etc., like, and that's just an example, but Paul Manafort, what's his nuts? Michael Flynn.
Nobody wants to know who commissioned that dossier. That's fascinating to me.
True. So I think my point is when there's enough of this scandal, whether some of it's true, well, some of it is true, maybe some of it we're still trying to flesh out, maybe part of it isn't true. If he is not embroiled, or at least his administration is not embroiled in these type of scandals or just in the situation that he's in, North Korea becomes far more consequential. Because as long as there's a Russian tie to the president of the United States, true or not true, North Korea is not consequential because people will always look at it more skeptically. 100%.
What about Venezuela?
Well, here's the thing with the president, right? He is... And I'm not saying this to attack the president. I'm just stating what has happened. Look at sort of illuminating and sending positive vibes to people, to leaders in the world who shouldn't have that sort of positive reinforcement, like Duterte in the Philippines, like saying that he respects Xi Jinping's, the China's president, or dictator rather, for executing fentanyl manufacturers. Like, fentanyl manufacturers are assholes, but should we be executing, or should we at least be giving positive reinforcement to a government that executes fentanyl users, possibly without due process? Like, when well, you start,
do, I mean, but, I get it. But, he's highlighted it because he's a strongman.
But when you praise strongmen, okay, when you actively praise strongmen,
and by that, folks, we mean thugs. I know everybody may not be familiar with that.
When you actively praise strongmen and shit on your allies, meeting with the dictator of North Korea is far less consequential and is met with more skepticism than it would be if he didn't do that and it was the other way around. If he was building,
he's been consistent, though. If you think about it, this America First thing, this is consistency.
But is America, is building stronger allegiances with our allies better for America, or praising thugs and meeting with dictators? Like, what, you have to look at it and step back from the macro perspective and say, why isn't this really, if I was a strategist or if I was in the White House and the question was brought up, hey, why is this not resonating the way we thought it would? That's exactly what I would tell him. I tell him everything I just said, like, look what you're doing.
Because it's obfuscated by everything else.
Absolutely. It's obfuscated by the direct, by his language, by him, the way he acts towards allies and the way he acts towards the people that shouldn't get the positive reinforcement. So when you go and you meet with a dictator from North Korea, it's going to be met with skepticism. It's going, and then you say shit like, oh, his coasts are great. I put some real estate on the coast of North Korea. It's very beautiful. Like, what in the actual, I've never said the F word on this podcast, but that's the way I feel. Like, of course this isn't the home run you were looking for. It's not, because of your track record leading up to this point. And,
you know, that ties back into the Russia investigation, though, because all this boils down to, even though I might make note once again how far out of his mandate the special prosecutor is, whether folks have forgotten or not, the special prosecutor was actually commissioned to investigate whether Russia impacted the election in terms of results.
And it today did.
We found no evidence of that.
No,
the fact is, nobody can handle the fact that Hillary Clinton lost. I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, in an environment post-Citizens United survival, what difference does it make, to quote Secretary Clinton? Let's say he's guilty of violating the Emoluments Clause to make a profit while president. So in other words, we're pissed off because this man from outside of the establishment has come in and done exactly what 97% of our elected representatives have done, and going to Washington and enriched themselves. Or do I exaggerate?
Well, the one, and I've thought about this before, and by the way, I don't know if you said that there was no evidence of Russian interference. Did you say that?
No. There's no evidence that Russia changed election results.
Oh, okay. That is true. I thought you said
found that tie. Oh, of course, there's evidence of Russian interference.
I was going to push back on you there, but
you must push back on that.
So here's what I think, and this is my opinion only with no real fact checking. I don't think that the president of the current president of the United States ever expected that he would be the president. So no, I think that with no family in public office, with running his entertainment shows, et cetera, his brand, not really anything else but his brand, I think he got caught off guard. So I don't think there was some plot that was hatched for years in advance to get to the presidency and then use it to his benefit. I think it just sort of happened. And
what? Exactly. And you know, the fact is, it's not illegal. Again, I've said this numerous times on the show. I'll say it again. It is not illegal to talk to Russians. It is not illegal to lie to the media. Okay. And again, how many of our politicians, I mean, where do the millions upon millions of dollars in these super PACs go after elections? You think they give it all back?
Yeah.
And the reality is, we know that our Congress, our representatives and senators are not surviving on $175 a year.
No.
That's the reality, okay? It's and Citizens United, which stands because of the Supreme Court, outrageously, it directly impacts our federal representative democracy, okay? We know it's open corruption. So let's say that Donald John Trump knew he was going to be president. He always wanted that, okay? Again, do you not find it a little outrageous, the outrage, if he is guilty of making a profit off of being president?
Okay, so I guess your point is, or the question is, if it was found that he violated the Emoluments Clause, he's directly profiting deliberately
off of being president. Is that a little hypocritical?
Well,
what's the difference in him and everybody else who's gone to Washington and enriched themselves?
It is not different. I think it's just more highlighted in the office of the presidency.
Right.
And yes, of
course. We're about to stay there. I just thought I'd mention that.
Of course, people. Every elected official, at least in the Senate, or those who have been tenured in the federal government, are absolutely making backdoor deals, are absolutely making handshake deals. And I mean, yeah, if you have if you're a lawyer and your primary job is a senator from a state and you're making $175 a year, but you're worth millions of dollars, something else is going on.
I don't want to stay there by any means. I just thought I would posit that because I hear so much of this about the Emoluments Clause. I'm going, okay, it's just like the fact that they're against Paul Manafort enforcing a law that has been enforced less than 10 times since it was enacted over 50 years ago regarding reporting foreign revenue. Okay, how many lobbyists, foreign agents, if you will, because that's what they're quantified as, in D.C., how many of them do you think self-report all the money they make?
Well,
what Paul Manafort is going to prison for?
So you're right, but the difference is
not saying that makes Paul Manafort right.
No, it's not that it is right. It is that Paul Manafort got caught up, and if more individuals who have done what Paul Manafort has done would get caught up in any sort of investigation, I mean. His guilty pleas and the charges that were levied against him were more of an aside from the entire investigation. It wasn't the investigation into Paul Manafort. He just happened to be there. So, you know, you can't just go. I don't know how true this is, but so check me if I'm wrong here. But you can't just go investigating people to investigate people. Like, there has to be a reason to do it. And there was a reason to start investigating the people around the president of the United States, and they found this out. So if you're a foreign agent and you're not declaring your money until there's a reasonable or probable cause to go after you, like, the government doesn't just go investigate everything. I mean, the IRS checks your taxes, and if there's no discrepancies, then there's no reason to investigate. So if all of a sudden there was a special prosecutorial division that specifically went after this kind of stuff, I'm sure we would find more, but that's not probably within the confines of law in the United States. So I'm sure it happens, but unless you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, it's not going to come out. So it's to me, it's like, yeah, it's a law that hasn't been used for whatever 50 years, but it did this time because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. and it comes back to, like, the enrichment of our politicians. Like, yeah, we all know it's happening. However, the presidency of the United States, A, is on a pedestal, as it should be, and it's spotlighted.
Is it?
Well, yeah, good point. But it should be, right? That individual should be the shining star or the example of what a U.S. citizen should be. And again, I don't think Trump had some hatched plan or conspiracy to benefit from the presidency, but it didn't start well for him when he essentially, we talked about it on many podcast episodes ago, and I think I did a solo on the Emoluments Clause and Trump essentially not taking, he stepped away from his business, but the way you do is you put someone in control that no one, they essentially don't know what company it is, that they're controlling. And the president really has no, authority at all. I mean, like, just keeping right. his, so it's, there's just too many kid. There's it's too many kid. Webs, right? It's his kids. It's his kids, but he also has his kids in government and his
well, that's what I mean. Son-in-law. They're in the White House at the same time.
It's like and, a kleptocracy.
You know, Don Jr. is involved, but he's not in the White House. But, oh, he's dating Kimberly Guilfoyle, which might have nothing to do with nothing,
but
except for the fact she was at Fox News. By the way, did you know she used to date Gavin Newsom, the governor of California?
No, I did not.
Now you know.
Okay, thank you.
That is a lot. Go on.
And we can argue nepotism, whether it is nepotism or it isn't nepotism. It's pretty damn close if it's not. Well, because if you're not really getting paid, it's technically not nepotism.
He's not getting paid, the president's giving his salary away, but I'm pretty sure his kids are getting paid for the jobs they're performing.
Maybe they are now, but from the last time I checked, I think Ivanka had a unpaid job at the White House.
Oh, well, you know what? That's incorrect.
And that was to skirt nepotism by saying like she's essentially volunteering her time, therefore it's not nepotism. Well,
technically,
if in my rule book, holy shit, that's about as close to nepotism. That's skirting the nepotism river pretty close. So I think the broader point here is when you have all of these factors, every one of these factors that most Americans know about, unless you're under a rock, anything the president does is even if it's positive in your own political ideology, if like bump stocks, it doesn't go that far. And when you do something that should be really monumental, like meeting with the dictator of North Korea, because of everything else, like the nepotism and the possible emoluments clause and the Russian investigation and the clearly the criminals that you've had close to you, it just is a little grosser. And I'm not saying this because I don't like the president. That's not the case at all. It's just it's perception's reality sometimes. I don't know if that's the right way to frame that. No,
it's true. It would be as though the broader point you're making here would be as though, let's say, Mod State had hit upon mainstream success, and yet. Here you and I were trumpeting for all this acclaim and saying, look at all the good we've accomplished. But at the same time, we've got, God forbid, just some series of horrifying financial and or ethical scandals, investigations going on about us at the same time. And we're going, but look at all. No, I see what you're getting at. He's got, I think, distraction is too small of a word.
It's way too small of a word.
It seems like we can't go 72 hours without some sort of fiasco, often spawned or related to a tweet sent at the wee hours. And it's just the good folks have seemed to have left the administration. Not that there's nobody good there right now, but a lot of the stars, such as James Mattis, they've gone through the exit doors. Reince Priebus, I think, was a serious loss, and I think that was handled poorly. There are a number of good actors have left the stage, and right now we've got a growing ensemble of hawks that are going to reinforce the president's America First ideology. Not that that in and of itself is wrong. That's not what I'm getting at, but I see what you're getting at. There's diminishing returns to all this because of just the series of just this overhanging cloud of chaos.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, man, you hit the nail on the head for like the other piece of this. There hasn't been any consistency in the administration, notably relative to the other administrations.
Right. So, other than the America First foreign policy, which still has been conducted a bit in a bizarre fashion. You know, in his defense, I'll say this, that, you know, the criticism from the mainstream media of him being a box checker is outrageous because, as I've noted before on this podcast, we crap on politicians who don't deliver on their promises. Well, In that regard, I give the president high marks because you can say he's going down a list if you want, fine, but damn it if he's not trying to bust hell wide open to do what he said he would do.
Yeah, and that comes...
Give him that.
And that comes back to the... That comes back to the border wall national emergency. It's like
you're
box checking, but holy shit. Like, at what point are we okay with not checking that box?
Well, at what lest, point are lest we going to make an
effort? Well,
sorry, continue.
Again, we're talking about, we're checking a box now for 33%, the diehard base, which I'm going to argue on an assumption that any sort of immigration or illegal immigration across the border is not affecting those individuals at all. Taxes, maybe, but we pay those taxes anyway, and your taxes aren't being increased because of illegal immigration. So it's, or if it is, it's like statistically irrelevant or negligible. So that's again, perception is reality. You've got, we're now creating a national emergency, reappropriating funds to an emergency that the president said wasn't really an emergency, to check the box for a base who are just ideologically involved in an issue that really doesn't affect them day to day at all. It's just some weird political Fox
I'm
News.
I'm an advisor to the White House. I'm making this point that at some point, all right, we've got to begin to look to, yes, playing to your base, doing what you said you would do is great, sir. However, with a capital comma, we've got to at some point look at expanding that base. And I outlined before in, I think, 63 seconds or less, well, I forget what the recording, the length of it was, you might remember, but how he could make a deal on immigration and not lose his base, make the argument. He also could, and this is something else, his son-in-law who pushed for First Step, folks, has also pushed for the descheduling, or at least the removal from Schedule 1 of marijuana, okay? And he could, the president has an opportunity to justify this to his base by saying, look, we're going to tax and regulate this just like alcohol. It's going to be a boon in terms of tax revenue. It's going to create jobs, an entire new industry. It's also going to relieve pressure off of security and allow them to deal directly with banks. There's yet another way that folks are going to make money here, because there's transaction fees for everything. You know that. Mm-hmm. That's a way for him to justify this to his base. And simultaneously, there's no way it doesn't move the needle in terms of his support beyond his base for him to do that.
100%. The real issue here is that the president, the president of the United States won't be able to articulate what you just articulated to the American people. Like, he might be able to do it in one speech, but he still has Twitter and he still has his streams of consciousness. So, I mean,
are you saying that he'll muddy the waters after doing so?
I guess he can't. Well, that was unfair of me.
No. I'm asking you. Do you think I'm not his lawyer, okay?
It was unfair of me to say that the president would not be able to articulate exactly what you articulated if that was his wish.
Think he's going to further muddy the waters? Yeah. Tweet.
It isn't.
Do you think? I'm just asking here. Do you think that would be I'm sure there's going to be 1 out of 10 at his base pissed off, but is it going to make them not vote for him? Is that issue alone going to keep them from coming to the polls? Do you think that it would be a winning argument?
Here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. To be honest, where we are right now and what is really driving him to make these decisions, like Ann Coulter literally calling him an idiot and a wimp and then him changing his mind on something, it honestly, and maybe I'm putting on a tinfoil hat here, but whatever Fox News decides on that issue will be how that base rolls with it. So if they fully support the president on cannabis legalization or at least
decriminalization. So I need to get on Fox News is what you're telling me.
Exactly. But that's the truth. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, that's the funnel. That's the medium by which the president's ideas are articulated, or they come from that group of individuals. Maybe they're not on Fox News exactly, but they're that sphere of individuals. So whatever, maybe
somebody at the Small Business Administration needs to hear from us more often.
Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like, just as I articulated before about immigration, that look, this is a real simple, fiscally conservative way to win this. Okay, by saying, hey, look, these folks coming in, DACA, etc.
You don't think
on our investment to suddenly boot these folks, like get them social security numbers, have them paying taxes, they repay their debt to society. That's how we finance the wall long term. Mm-hmm. That's a winning argument, and it benefits those individuals. We may not like that, the acerbic nature of the tone. I really feel like the cannabis deal, that's a winning argument as well.
So before we wrap up, you don't think that our source, mainly your source, at the Small Business Administration, hasn't been lobbied by the cannabis industry in exactly the same way you just articulated it? I'm honestly curious. It's not rhetorical. It's not facetious.
I obviously can't verify that one way or the other. I'm not so sure that argument has been articulated that way, because I think a number of people are thinking either A, that's too ballsy to say, or B, they'll never roll with it. My thing is, you know, you only live once. Fortune favors the daring. And I think at this point, bold moves are what's needed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have, honestly. And if it has been lobbied as such, I don't know that it's reached the president. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it is our friend. He's very aware of your work, because you're the progenitor of the podcast, you know. And so I know technically he's a contact introduced through me, but I think this is something that's been missed. And hey, we might be wasting our time here, because we go, yep, we've heard it. I don't know, because of there's some individuals, say one Stephen Miller, that I don't think want what I just argued about immigration, much less cannabis, reaching the president.
Yeah.
And so I'm honestly wondering if, because we have another contact I've mentioned to you before that has all these media contacts from her time running a major newspaper, I'm honestly wondering if we don't need to make our way onto Fox News if what you say, if you really believe that that's the earpiece to the president.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the evidence shows that, but, you know,
maybe we need, you know, you see all kinds of media outlets that are used on there. I mean, maybe that's what we need to do, is make our case via multimedia to say, hey, we belong being Fox News contributors. We can do it remotely.
Oh, God.
Well, seriously, you could do it from Colorado with Skype. That's done. Newt Gingrich has appeared via Skype. I mean, maybe that's what we need to do.
Sounds like...
I need to get kicked off this podcast. I don't know, folks. You need to email us, monse@monse.com, and tell us just how big of an ass I made myself tonight. I'm pretty good at it.
Well, you know what? It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Hey, we're at 42 minutes, well over what we thought we were going to do on this, but sometimes we get carried away. So, upcoming Fox News contributors, that'd be a complete drastic... Oh, God. So, well, my friend, until next time, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.